is nothing more inspiring than a woman being unapologetically herself.
The answers are all in your heart.
She's waiting.
She's waiting.
She's waiting for you to set her free.
Welcome to Be You Podcast. I'm Jill Herman, and I am so glad you're here. I was broke, insecure, and craved approval. But with grit, hustle, and sacrifice, I still built a successful multi-million dollar business. 10 years in, burnout, I slowed down and looked inward. In that silence, I discovered that the same level of success could have come to me with much less effort and so much more joy. That's when I threw out the expectations of the world and chose to unbecome every single thing I thought I was supposed to be. And the real me was uncaged. It was far from easy. And in this podcast, I'll offer my entire journey as a roadmap so that if you're ready, you can finally be you. Okay, so as promised, I am back here with Rachel Ruth Tate. And what we are doing today is letting you in on a private conversation where she already did my reading for me. We actually spoke already. And I asked her in front of you to give like the highlights, the meat and potatoes, the nuts and bolts. So one, you could witness a reading so that you can see what it would be like if you or when you have one with Rachel. But also, it'll be kind of interesting for you to know a little bit more about me because you listen to me every week. But the main reason is for you to just see how it works because it's, in my opinion, this is very complex and it's a lot to understand and try to digest. And when you have an expert just give you little bite-sized pieces, it's really nice to be able to digest that. And so I'm going to let you kind of practice that with me. So Rachel's going to give what would you call it? Like the abbreviated version, the highlights, let's say, of my reading.
Sure.
And so you, the listener, can hear that and see what it would be like to have her read your charts for you. So what do we know about Jill Maria Herman?
Well, Jill, I think that we should start at the beginning with your sun and with your moon. For the listeners, the sun is the center of the solar system. We know this. It provides all the light, all the heat, all the energy for life within our solar system. And in the natal chart, archetypically, it holds a similar space. It is the expressed energy of self, the personality, the vibe we give off, if you will. Whereas the moon is the complement. So the moon is the earth satellite, right? And it reflects the light of the sun in the evening. The moon in the natal chart reflects our internal interpretation of external energy. So how do we integrate the light of others? How do we feel internally about the energy coming in? In your case, the sun and the moon are in the same sign, making you a new moon baby.
Sorry to interrupt you. I do have a quick question. Will you explain to me and our listeners, first of all, how common is it that someone has their sun and their moon in the same sign? Is that pretty common or no?
It is relatively common. It happens once a month. So one day out of the month or once every 28 and a half days, the sun and the moon are in the same sign. So it's about 1/29th chance that the listener has this themselves.
Okay. Sorry to have interrupted you. Go ahead.
Not at all. Hey, I love your questions. It prompts me to give answers that I'm sure the listeners have similar questions. So the sun and the moon are together once, right, every month. And the sun and the moon together create internal and external consistency. The way you express outward the sun and the way that you interpret and internalize the moon, these are the same in your nativity. And your sun and moon are both in the sign of Scorpio, which is one of the 12 signs. It is the eighth sign in the zodiac, ruled by Mars. It's our fixed water sign. Translation. You are somebody whom is active, always have been, always will be. Also, somebody who is both private and active. Scorpio is Mars's yin sign, meaning that you'll be somebody who probably considers deeply within. You're somebody for whom there is no limit to depth and to the potential for feeling and sensing. All water signs possess the ability to feel and sense, to intuit, to understand that which maybe isn't externally manifest. It's more like the unseen, right? The felt. And so you have this deep and unique ability to take in information or to take in energy and to parse out what's true, what's not true. And oftentimes, even though we don't mean to, we tell small lies all the time. Like when someone asks you, how are you? And you're like, I'm fine. And you're not at all, right? A Scorpio, sun and moon, would definitely understand when somebody was saying fine, and they were not fine.
Rachel, this just happened last night. I just had a little spat with my husband because I was explaining to him that when he doesn't express how he feels, it's not wrong to do that, but it's hard for me because I can feel it. He says he's nothing, or he says it's fine. I can feel it to the point where I can't unsee and unfeel what I'm sensing. And so I would say to him, just please say it. I'd rather you just say it because I can 100% feel that there's something underneath this. We were talking about planning a trip, and it turns out he had a lot of hesitation around it, but he didn't want to disappoint me. So yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And when you did my reading, you know, to be transparent, you and I both know something that the listener doesn't know is I started crying when you said that last time. When you talked about the depth of feeling, because I do feel things so deeply that sometimes it hurts so much. Like even when I was a child, you know, I would watch those videos by Sally Struthers about the kids starving in Africa. And it hurts so, I'm going to cry right now again. It hurts so much to see that. And I couldn't eat. My mom said I would just like take a bowl of iceberg lettuce and I would just eat that because I couldn't eat knowing they couldn't eat and I couldn't unfeel it. And so it was hard to even go to sleep because I could feel what they were feeling. So yeah, and also even just sometimes it's just sort of this like, I don't know, daily existential crisis.
You could not have better introduced the ruler of that sun and moon in your chart, which is Mars and Pisces. And so Mars rules your sun and moon, and Pisces is also a water sign. So double water here. You can feel and sense a lot. You're not one to keep information from, or you're not one to ignore the vibes because you've got access to all of it. Probably some intuitive gifts as well, which I know you have. But that Mars in Pisces, Pisces is the last sign in the zodiac, the 12th sign. It's ruled by Jupiter. And Jupiter is, so Mars is our active principle. Jupiter is our higher purpose. So the greater good is represented by Jupiter. So having the ruler of your sun and moon be in that yin or receptive, that watery reception of higher good and of collective benefit, you feel for the collective. You act for the collective and specifically for their benefit with compassion, with deep empathy, so much empathy that specifically with that sun and moon in Scorpio, it could potentially be difficult to exist in the world, right? Knowing, feeling, sensing. Like, listen, the range of human emotion can be represented by all of the water signs and specifically by Pisces. Mutable water is water without boundaries. It can move in any direction. And the spectrum of human emotion is vast and it's intense. Every joy has a sorrow, which is mirrored and equal, right? For all the exaltation and glory, there is like depth and pain, right? We can feel so many different ways, and Mars in Pisces has access to all of that. So I'm sure that you at once act upon these better impulses, or you listen to your better angels with that Mars in Pisces. But also it might be something that could be overwhelming, especially as a child, to be subject to that level of awareness. And that Mars is ruled by Jupiter, as I mentioned. So I'm going back in the rulership tree. And for those listeners who are like, what's a rulership tree? Seeing where the buck stops. Where is the final destination? Who's ruling who? Who's ruling who? So we know who's actually in charge, quote unquote. And so your Mars ruled by Jupiter. Well, Jupiter in your chart is ruled by itself over in Jupiter's other sign of Sagittarius in the ninth sign, right? Sagittarius is the ninth sign in the zodiac. It is mutable fire. And it is the opposite and yet the same as Pisces. Pisces is received wisdom, that deep internal understanding of the collective purpose and benefit. And Sagittarius is the other. It's the opposite. It's the seeking of higher purpose. It is the going out and exploring, the discovering, the learning, the journey. Whereas Pisces is like the become still and listen. Sagittarius is the go forth and prosper. And so you have Jupiter in Sagittarius, which Jupiter eventually is the ruler of your sun and moon. So that means that you will be a relatively jovial Scorpio. Most Scorpios are not quite so jovial. They're a bit more private, a bit more austere, a bit more serious, or less ebullient than somebody like you would be. Because your Jupiter that rules those things is also conjoined to other personal planets. And I would say that the planets we're talking about, additionally with Saturn, are the most important planets. They're the seven traditional planets, or five planets with two luminaries. So Mercury and Venus are with Jupiter, and they are conjoined. Mercury's conjoined Venus in Sagittarius, and those are conjoined your Jupiter. And in traditional Hellenistic astrology, you can think of conjunctions as the light fusing by the time it receives, or by the time you receive it here on the earth. So all of those things become one.
Okay, so they're conjoined just in my reading, or they're always conjoined?
Mm-hmm. Just in your reading. This is your chart forever. These are always conjoined. So having Jupiter conjunct Mercury conjunct Venus means that that which is your higher purpose, Jupiter, is also the place of your mind. So Mercury, you are thinking about your purpose all the time. You're thinking about the collective.
Yes.
You're trying to learn. Mm-hmm. And you love it. That's Venus. Venus is, what do you enjoy? What smells, tastes, what lights you up? You know, what do you love? And that all being together, you love the people. You have a heart for the people. You have a heart for spiritual journeying. This is where you put your mind, your business efforts and endeavors. And this is what turns you on. This is what makes you happy.
Genuinely.
Does that track for you?
Yes. Like, I was trying to explain this to a friend because I'm so new to this, you know? And I said, this is not a psychic reading. This isn't her predicting things for me because she has a feeling or she's interpreting. She's literally reading a formula. Like, it is just this period, no emotion involved. This is it. It's like, that's why I'm so fascinated by this. And so when I say yes, I'm not surprised. It's not like I'm like, oh, she got one right. Like, I'm saying yes, like, okay, that's true what you're saying. And yes, it tracks for me. Like, I feel that deeply. I know that about myself. You know, when people have shown that, it's probably like a diagram, I guess you'd call it, where they say something about your purpose. It's like two circles that cross each other. It's almost like what you're good at, what you enjoy, and in the center is your purpose, you know? And I was saying to my husband, just what you just said about me, I said, I wouldn't know how to live any other way. Like, I wouldn't know how, unless I were to live a lie. Like, I have to do what feels like my purpose and what I enjoy and what I'm good at. I have to, because it feels like death if I don't.
And you've also got one more planet in the same house. It's not conjoined. It's not fused with the Jupiter, the Mercury, and the Venus, but you've got Neptune up in there. So I'm sure that some of your life has been absolutely stranger than fiction, that you've had some crazy, otherworldly, mystical experiences, specifically on trips, but that also you've come into contact with some fascinating characters.
Yes.
Has that been your experience?
Yes. So you're saying especially on trips, because I haven't traveled much, but I'm going to be. Actual traveling, you mean?
It's the adventurer. So the more that you go around the world, the more of these interesting and wild beings. And I say wild beings, we all know these people where you're like, wow, I couldn't make this person up. I've never met someone like this. Or having those mystical experiences, like those synchronicities where like everything lines up one after the other after the other. Maybe you hear the same word a million times and you're like, oh my gosh, it becomes so meaningful because then you have an experience where everything kind of comes together. That's having Neptune in Sagittarius and Neptune nearby, all this stuff, your own desires as well as your business will be bringing you into contact with these sorts of people and experiences in the future. Also, the last planet we have not addressed in your chart in any way, the last traditional planet, the visible planets, right? Those are what we care about because we can see them in the life. We can see them in the sky. We can see them in the life. The last one is Saturn. And you have Saturn across the way, across the zodiac from those four planets in Sagittarius. You have Saturn in Gemini. And this means Saturn is the opposite of Jupiter, the companion of Jupiter. So it's not the expansion, the benefit, the higher purpose. It's where are we restricted? Where does our membership in a collective, even society or our family, where does that challenge us? What are our historical burdens to bear? We all have some, right? And in your case, Saturn in Gemini means that probably you've had some issues with your children or around specifically communication or expression around your children, maybe news, maybe slander. You know, Gemini is Mercury's express sign. So it's mutable air. It's all the things we can say, think, chat about, talk about, create. And so having Saturn in Gemini means sometimes getting some bad press or being bad mouthed. And sometimes Saturn in Gemini means that, you know, we struggle with duality, with dual experiences. You've got all this great Sagittarius stuff across the way. You've got all these lovely planets. Jupiter in Sagittarius is super strong. You've got your mind and your heart aligned in one place. And then yet there's this kind of struggle with those issues that I just mentioned. Does that track for you?
It really does. So I was just texting with my nieces and nephew today. They're all in their 30s, very close to them. And we were talking about an upcoming trip. We're all going, my nephew's getting married. He lives in Brazil. He's already legally married, but during COVID, he couldn't really have a wedding. So they're going to have a wedding. We're all going. And one of them said, I said something about my oldest daughter, Mary Caroline, working a lot and felt like she couldn't take time off to go to the wedding. And I encouraged her and said, you know, one of the biggest lessons I've learned is to be successful is to know when to rest, know when to pause, put your business on pause, et cetera. And my niece said, she's so lucky to have you. And I said, well, guys, there's something that you don't know. What the experience my children had with me for many, many years was the opposite of what you had at with me before I had children as your aunt. And that is that I would say horrible things. I would have rage just come over me. I would scream and yell at them to the point where I didn't even recognize myself. Then I talked more about, you know, like acknowledging, apologizing, how the repair can be stronger than the rupture and how that's been a gift to my children. I was just being honest with them. And so when you say that there might be issues with your children, that's exactly what the issue is. This isn't just, you know, every mom snaps at their kid every now and then. Like I've been very transparent on the show that I had like unhealed trauma that I wasn't even aware of. And I was leaking rage and anger at my little sweet children for no reason, you know, or they did something and I would just go overboard. Anyway, and I did that for years. And the effect then is that now my lesson is to somehow be able to forgive myself for that and release the mom guilt. And that's a huge part of this podcast is me figuring out how can I reconcile and really get over that and release that and be free of it. Because the story in my head is a good woman would never really stop feeling guilty about that.
Let me put your mind a little bit at ease. Speaking of your mind, your Mercury rules that Saturn. And your Mercury's in Sagittarius conjunct both benefics. So you'd think, oh, this is a cakewalk, right? Jupiter's in its own sign. Venus is here. We love it. Well, Mercury experiences its own detriment or difficulty in Sagittarius. And for the very same reason, I have a father with a triple conjunction in Sagittarius, including Mercury and Jupiter. So I'm saying this from a place of awareness and understanding personally. But Mercury in Sagittarius can lose its head. Mercury in Sagittarius, that mutable fire, like a forest fire, it can just, the anger can come on quickly. And conjunct Jupiter, it can expand rapidly, like when a forest fire gets fuel, right? That it can exponentially increase. And Mercury experiences its detriment here, not just because of the fiery quality, but specifically because Mercury in Sagittarius has a hard time verbalizing what it knows. It has these values, which are kind of like trying to say the name of God. In most religions, we don't have an agreed upon name of God. This is the Tower of Babel here. We fight about the name of God. We fight about the right religion. That is why Mercury experiences detriment in Sagittarius. We all want to be right. But Mercury in Sag is trying to agree upon something that is ineffable, right? Sagittarius is the sign of spiritual seeking. And when we go out and we experience these wild, mystical impressions, like these amazing things that we never forget, you can't transmit that to somebody in a story. That's why we have so many issues with translations and the Bible and different holy books. It's hard to agree upon these things, which are unspeakably beautiful. And so Mercury in Sagittarius has a hard time putting into words that which it knows and that which it's passionate about. So the more passion, and of course, with your children, there's a whole lot of passion, right? You care so much. But the root word of passion is pathos, which means pain. And so it can be painful trying to put into words these things which are before and beyond them. Do you ever feel like that, or have you ever felt like this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
It's something that would get much better eventually because you have Saturn there in Gemini. So the older you get, Saturn represents time and age, patience. The more patience you would have.
And Rachel, one other thing I'll share is that as much as I loved my children, I was not aware until maybe 5 years ago or so that I rarely told them that. I rarely told them. It's almost like my feeling for them was so big, I didn't know how to say it, and I didn't know I wasn't saying it until, I'm going to guess, about 5 years ago when I realized it. They've never said this to me, but I realized, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't say a lot verbally what most moms say, which is, I love you, I love you. I just didn't say it. I just thought they could feel it. And it was too hard for me to even express anyway. And so then I made this effort to say it. And I'm going to be really like raw here and tell you that when I say things, even to my husband, like, I love you, or like the typical words that people use, I feel very inauthentic. Because it's like, it just feels so, right now, I don't even know how to explain the words. Like, it's like I can't really articulate what I really feel. So I'm going to use the language of humans that I'm supposed to use. So I'll say it so that the other person feels or hears me say it, but it can't even come close to how I really feel.
So Saturn and Gemini, besides having, you know, rumors spread about you or having issues with authority, which is oftentimes the Saturn and Gemini thing, there's also that difficulty with expression. Because Gemini is Mercury's young or assertive sign. So coming up with the words is a Gemini thing exclusively. And having Saturn there means, and this is Saturn retrograde as well, meaning that you would have unconventional difficulties in expressing, specifically words, thoughts, these things you'd be hesitant to do so. And likely because authority figures in the past didn't take it appropriately or didn't interpret it in the same way as you meant it. And so you didn't want to be misunderstood. You probably were misunderstood quite often by older people as a youth. But as you age, this would get much better. The interesting thing is this Saturn is across from all those Sagittarius stuff, but one of the bodies in your chart, which relates to both Sagittarius and Gemini, is your Mars in Pisces, that sweet Mars in Pisces. So you were probably much more capable of acting out love, of love as a verb, love as the service, love as the doing, than the expression of it verbally. Does that feel right?
100%. Like, I would go to so much detail throwing a birthday party for my kids. It wasn't to impress the other kids. It wasn't for anyone else. It was for my child. And it didn't have to cost a lot of money. I would just put so much effort into things like that. Or being the, you know, brownie and Girl Scout leader, even though I was working 3 jobs and I had no time. Or setting up a little art table in their room so they always could create. And like, I did things like that out of love, while at the same time not really saying to them, you know, I love you as much as I wish I would have known to do. It's funny you mentioned rumors, because do you know that even in high school, from high school on, I've always had people, of course, not everybody, right? But a lot of people misunderstanding me or almost like attacking me or saying things about me. And it sounds like such a victim story. So I don't say that. I've never told anyone that. But you saying that, it's like almost like, you know, it's in the stars for me. It has been that way for so long. I mean, when I was a little kid, I remember someone in the neighborhood saying, you know, everybody says that you're just so stuck up because you think you're so pretty. And I was like, what? Where'd that come from? Or in high school, you know, people saying things and then later, anyway, it's happened several times.
That makes sense to me as well, partially for this reason. So there's another set of points that outside of the planets that relate to this Saturn. And that are those are your north and south nodes. So for the listener, the north and south nodes sound crazy. It's where the sun's apparent path through the sky, so the sun doesn't move, we do, and the moon's orbit actually cross. It's where we have eclipses, when the moon lines up just right for the full and new moon. And you can think of it as kind of like the threads of light, right? The sun is light, the moon's light. It tells us the story because light is information. So what are the threads? What are they saying? The north node is future-oriented. The south node is past-oriented. In this lifetime, we are moving towards the north node's symbolism and expression. And we are likely already masters of the south node's symbolism and expression. The south node, in your case, is in Leo, the sign of the sun, the sign of the self. You've probably never had an issue being yourself, as in no matter what people say about you or what girls are doing or whatever, what job you're in, you are probably good with you, meaning never wanted to be a different person. That's typically what South Node in Leo people feel like. And this South Node in Leo relates to your Saturn by sextile, and it relates to all that Sagittarius stuff by trine. So it's like, hey, I'm good with my gifts and talk whatever shit you want. I'm going to succeed. Now, the north node that you have is across from that. It's in Aquarius. North node in Aquarius is meant to be a leader of community, meant to be a paragon and an example, meant to be restrained because it's ruled by Saturn. Aquarius is Saturn's sign, Saturn's expressive sign. So it's about fairness. It's about humanitarianism. It's about collective agreements, organization, the relationships we have that are non-physical, that keep us all in order, right? We're responsible, for example, for our children legally. Like that's an agreement, it's a covenant we've all made and agreed upon. That's kind of Aquarius stuff. But Aquarius is also the part of Saturn, the part of our burdens or our issues, in which we experience being othered. So you were always meant to be othered by others. This north node trines your Saturn. And what that means is that you will be somebody who moves towards that position of community authority throughout your life. You were probably somebody whom other people envied when you were young. And now you're moving into a place where people respect you, where they look to your life or to your work specifically as an example, the things that you've taken a long time to build and the groups that you form the center of, even if you're not at the center. North Node in Aquarius typically feels most at home in a group when they are organizing the group or leading the group, maybe not in the middle of the group.
That's 100% me.
I love that. And that's kind of the destiny of your chart. And it relates to all of that Sagittarius stuff by sextile. So you have this unique opportunity to be a powerful leader, specifically because of the difficult experiences that you've had. And that sort of challenge, that sort of work that you've done methodically in order to become a better communicator, it's what will make you that community leader as well. I love that you started laughing because I feel like this is North Node in Aquarius is a hard placement. I have it too. I have that same placement. And so it can feel very funny at times to feel.
I'm such a loner and I love being alone. Like I could just not leave my house. In fact, I shouldn't say I could not leave my house for days. I don't leave my house for days. Like I love to be by myself. My husband laughs. I'm like, I'm good. Like literally 2 weeks at home, no problem. Why would I need to go see anybody? Why would I need to know my neighbors? Like my husband's the mayor of the area. He knows we live out in the country. So we see our neighbors, but they're fairly far. He knows all their names. He's a Leo. All their numbers are in his phone. I don't know their effing names. I don't want to know their effing names. I mean, I send love to them, but I want to be left alone. However, yes, I love to organize groups. If you ask me about like my friend group, I've never had a clique of friends. I've always been alone with maybe like one friend. As a woman of 52 and a half years old now, here's how I would describe it. My quote unquote friend group is I know Rachel Ruth from here. I know Corky from here. I know Mary from there. None of them know each other, but I love bringing them together. Like, I'm known for bringing people together who've never met before. And I'm like, look, you all have the same vibe because I was attracted to you. And then they all end up liking each other. And so my friend group, if there is one, is this eclectic mismatch of people who are so different yet so alike, and they have this great attractions. They always say, I loved that group. That was like one of the best dinners ever. I'm like, I know, because you all vibe the same. I went off on a tangent, but that's just because I'm becoming friends with you and getting to know you. I thought you'd find that interesting, that that's how I would describe my social interactions.
You could not have embodied this placement more so. And to add to that, part of the loner is not just the South Node in Leo, that's also the Sun and Moon in Scorpio. If I met a Sun, Moon in Scorpio who liked to be out with people constantly, I'd have to get a new gig because astrology wouldn't hold. So the Sun and Moon in Scorpio need some time to be internal, to listen, to be quiet in order to act with the most certitude and to pursue personal renewal through creativity. And in your case, 52 is a fifth house year. Let's go. Fifth house is all about creativity, all about joy, all about children, also about creative energy and expressing that through making, moving, and doing in ways that bring satisfaction. And that feels like totally what you're doing with the podcast this year.
It does. And it feels like what I'm going to be doing that I haven't shared with anyone about this book I've been knowing is supposed to be birthed for a long time. It's almost like you have a sign that you're going to be pregnant, but you have no idea when you're going to be pregnant. And when you do become pregnant, the catch is it's not going to be a 9-month pregnancy. Like, you have no idea. I've known that this book's been coming for quite some time, not because, oh, I'd like to write a book or this might be fun. I've just known. It's been put on me. It's like a soul contract, whatever you want to call it, tattooed on my heart. Whether I like it or not, it's going to happen at some point. And it's interesting because this is the first year where I'm not just saying it's going to happen. I can feel like it's coming. Like, instead of giving birth the normal way, it's like I'm giving birth, like I would say almost like through my mouth. I feel this energy coming. Like, it's just going to come out. I know it. And I have goosebumps right now. And it's funny you said 52, because I have a spiritual mentor who, by the way, is a Scorpio Sun and Moon. I just found out. And we are like telepathically, or whatever you call it, connected. Like, she will start to say something in this app we communicate on because she lives all over the world. And I will be saying the exact same thing. I'll finish the sentence. I'll say, hey, I had a dream. She's like, oh my God, I thought the same thing. We're always in sync about what we're going to do, what I'm going to do, whatever it is. So she said to me that with the indigenous women that she works with, they call them the grandmothers of all these different continents. They say that the year 52 is when you become a grandmother. Like, she's aspiring to be a grandmother through her training and through her, you know, she just did something called moon dance in the mountains of Chile, or 6 days of fasting and a water fast of no sleep. And like, she's doing all these things, and she will be a grandmother. I don't even know when, let's just say in her 30s, let's say. And she said to me, do you know that 52 is the number where you just become a grandmother? Like, you don't have to earn it. You don't have to do anything to earn it. And she said, 52 is like your year. It's a very important year for you. And we never really talked much more about it. And what you just described is what I'm feeling. It's not like I'm saying, oh, 52 is the year I feel like I should. It's just, I know that this is the year where I have everything's lining up. I feel the energy to create. Things are going to be happening that are new that I've never done before. This podcast is always going to be there, but I don't feel that it's the podcast. I feel that it's other things.
Mm-hmm. And for listeners, one, I love that story that you just shared, because that's other cultures already identifying patterns within lived experience, which they don't necessarily need to look at this chart to understand that. But the listeners, if you are in your 28th year, your 40th year, or your 52nd year, as well as your 64th year, then you are in a fifth house year. So you can just add and subtract 12 to that. Fifth house years are about, one, generating children, but two, generating anything, that creative, inspired part of you that knows what you need to bring in, right, or birth into your existence, whether that's a book, whether that's a business, depends on the arrangement of your chart and the planets that are there and the promises that your natal chart holds. But for everybody, those are generative years in which we enjoy ourselves because we're so satisfied by how we're getting to express and use our energy. So I hope that everybody else experiences the grandmother year at 52. My mother's like sitting over there in her 60s being like, I want to be a grandmother now. I have not fulfilled that for her just yet, but hoping to. I think that you've got a whole lot of stuff in store for you for this year too. Do you want me to kind of go into a little bit about this year for you?
Yes. If you have time, I would so love that. And I'm happy to have the listeners be a part of that.
So this year for you, I would imagine that that book pops out between the 26th of May and your birthday in November. I think that that would be the point in time in which all of this gets made or released or generated. I would also imagine that you're moving through releasing the need to control your relationships, that you are moving through a period of letting go of not necessarily fears, but releasing
worry.
Yeah, fear is what I was going to say.
Yeah, fear and worry.
Letting that go and moving into healing, specifically healing as an impetus for improved action. And everybody's kind of moving in that direction right now. The North Node is in Aries. So Aries is the first sign in the zodiac, cardinal fire ruled by Mars. And it's where the sun exalts. So we're all acting to move into a healing, self-healing, that allows us to start something really satisfying, to let go of those outmoded beliefs, those outmoded patterns, the relationships that aren't serving us, or the guilt, the fear that isn't serving us, and moving into a place of higher energy, more action, and personal fulfillment. I also think this year for you is going to be incredibly fated. I say that because pretty much everything is in Aquarius right now, as we speak, where your North Node is. The most important body being there, though, is Pluto. So I'm sure you're feeling like there is some major personal power, but collective, like some community or some organization that you're on the precipice of forming. And I would bet that between the end of November and the beginning of December, you're kind of like that vision comes together for what your focus is going to be long term. Probably for the next 20 years, you're going to focus on this. And it's going to be some sort of a group or some sort of a role, a public role or responsibility that you fulfill, that you show up. But maybe it's even just around the book or some of the concepts that are in this book. And it's probably taken you a long time to gather all of that up, but this is a once in a lifetime transit. And I think it will also be fascinating to see how this eclipse treats you this year, because you have a few placements that are really near the eclipse on April 8th and near the ruler of the eclipse, which will be Mars in Pisces during that time. So I would imagine that there is some communication, some changes in communication, probably some healing breakthroughs that you're going to make. And maybe you're even going to use some of your own tools or the things that you've learned to employ, like the modalities that you practice to make this happen. And I would bet that April is going to be a really revelatory and healing month for you. And that the revelations in April are kind of what powers you through that book writing process beginning in this summer. That conviction, right? That conviction is all we need. He who knows why can bear almost any how, right? A Scorpio would appreciate Nietzsche. So you're going to get all these things done. And I do think that in April, it will be a great time. Are you traveling in April, by the way?
No, I'm traveling in May.
That's even better. Are you traveling with your kids?
Here's what's interesting. Something tells me that I need to just be around in April. I don't know why. I just know that I need to be around at home or in the month of April. I don't know why. But the month of May, I'm going to Brazil for the wedding. My three biological children are coming and my grandson, Rocco. We're all going together. My two bonus kids can't come because of schedules. They're invited. They just can't come. And then I was supposed to, before that, actually go on a retreat in Egypt. but I just don't feel, with what's going on in the world, I just don't feel safe doing that. Everything in me, I think it's going to get canceled. I think it's going to be canceled. They say it isn't, but I feel it's going to be canceled. Either way, I know for certain I'm not supposed to be there. I was going to do that. It was going to be a big month. I was going to do that, go to Brazil for the wedding. And then after that is our 10-year wedding anniversary. And we have never taken a vacation alone that did not revolve around our children, our children's sports, or our work. So it's a very important thing that even if it's a 3-day weekend, that we get away alone just for us. So that would be May 31st is our 10-year anniversary. So for that weekend, we're going to go somewhere. We don't know where. But I don't have any plans to travel in April. Why do you ask?
Listen to your intuition. Listen to those Scorpio and Pisces placements, because I can tell you with a total solar eclipse happening in April, the Middle East is not going to be more stable. Nothing is going to be more stable in April than it is now. Things will be changing, and some of it for the better. But I also would not travel abroad in such a place during such a time. And for some of your listeners, if they're going someplace in April, this is not the end of the world. Probably something surprising will happen on your trips. So if you are planning for everything to go according to your schedule, don't travel in April. If I were a Scorpio, super Scorpio, I would want everything to go according to my plans. So I wouldn't travel in April at that time.
So interesting. Okay. So is there anything that you see that, because I have no fear around, if you said to me, you might have a challenging month in July, like be totally transparent with me. Do you see something in my chart that could be difficult for me in this year?
So far, not actually.
Because 2023 was rough. 2023 was rough.
2023 was rough, not just for you. I think a lot of people experienced some difficulty at that point. I think the only time that it might be difficult is, you know, it's hard to say, but there are a series of eclipses in the house of Libra. So there might be some relationships in which other people that you are related to, like husband, kids, friends, have a difficult time, and you might have to be there to support them in a time of some sudden grief or sudden move or sudden breakup, something that's really hard for other people. And you would be kind of the rock, if you will, the person who would be a place where they would feel felt. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to feel people when they're in such a state of tragedy or grief or difficulty. So emotionally, that could be a little bit taxing, but I don't think it ends up as a difficult thing for you.
What month do you see that in? April?
It's popping up between March and October. So a little bit in March, end of March, and then beginning of October are the kind of 2 months where I see those eclipses potentially creating some emotional or mental stress, for the lack of a better term. And it wouldn't be stress about you. Like you wouldn't be worried about yourself. It would be others whom you'd be showing up for and holding space for. Now, the only thing that I think could be a little dicey would be the Mars retrograde that starts on December 6th, because Mars is going to station retrograde very close to your south node. Now, this would be probably less hard for you, but you told me that your husband is a Leo, and having Mars retrograde near or over your sun can be really hard. The majority of this retrograde is happening in Cancer, not in Leo. And so I think that, again, I know I'm reemphasizing this, kids, grandkids, these might be the places where you find the issues and you're holding space, hurting with them, for them, you know, allowing them to emote. There's really, and I've had some clients where I've had to break to them some really rough stuff. We're actually just talking about within my family, some older members of the family that might pass, right? I'm seeing in the charts, they might pass. And that's kind of a hard conversation to have. If anything like that were to happen in or around your family, it would be in December.
Interesting.
It would be in December with that Mars retrograde. Again, you're not the one that has the issue.
Right.
But probably people around you, like, I'm not sure if your husband has both his parents, but maybe like one of his parents passing.
Yeah, we both do. We both have both of our parents.
And that could be sort of something like what I'm seeing. And some of these archetypes don't show up like I think. So if it's not his parents, right? Like if it's, don't think.
Yeah. No, I won't take it literally.
I don't have enough information about him or his chart to even get remotely close here. But you're going to get to a point in December when the transiting South Node ends up over your Pluto. And the transiting Mars, which is retrograding, ends up over your South Node, and they're making a sextile. This makes me think something gets lost. Like, I just think grief. The South Node is the past, but it's also the karmic release valve, like where we shed skin. And seeing Mars in the sign of the Sun and Pluto in the sign of Venus makes me think a loss of some life that's in relation to you.
Interesting.
So that would be the month I'd watch out for some around the holidays, to be quite honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the only thing in your chart which would give me any pause at all. I think April will be excellent for you no matter where you are, staying around or not staying around. I think that this spring is going to be full of possibility and potential. The summer will ramp up with some travel and some activities. And then there will be this, for everybody, slowdown during the summer. And maybe a bit of a more difficult fall. But in your case, things look pretty smooth sailing until that point.
Yeah, I really feel, I told you this before, that I've always seen the calendar as like a rectangle with one side missing. And my friend said to me, that's probably a moon. I was like, oh, I never thought about it like that. But so when I look, when you talk months, I see them that way. I see January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December. And there's this big space between December and January. That's just how I've always seen it my entire life, even as a little child. Anyway, when you were talking, I always, this is how I feel into my life. Like I can feel as I look between January and May, I know that once May comes, even though it's summertime, I know it's going to be slower. I can feel it. And that's probably me writing my book and just slowing down more because last year was a little more packed. I like a very slow pace. I can hang and go fast when I want to. I like things to be slow. And I like to, as I said, be myself and I'm not a go, go, go person. I should say that. People would be surprised by that because they think I'm high energy. I'm not a go, go, go person. I'm someone who likes to go very little. And so anyway, last year, you know, I traveled, I did a solo trip to Barcelona. I did my first plant medicine experience. There was just a lot. And this summer, I can feel that the summer is supposed to be slower for me and more, I don't know, insular maybe is the word. And anyway, it's just lining up with what you're saying.
There's also something about what you just said about your tendencies. New moon people. So if somebody has the sun and the moon in the same sign, that means that there is the least light off the face of the moon in the evening when you were born. So generally, you'd be somebody who needs quiet to feel right, to feel natural, needs that darkness, needs that lull, right? The new moon is the reset. It's the cyclic reset. And I'm sure your calendar C is an absolute moon, right? And if you have a waning crescent or a new moon, somebody like that would not do well with high energy all the time. That's a full moon person who's like, let's go, let's stay up, let's party. No, not the new moon and waning moon people. We're more retiring, maybe energy more toward the morning and quiet in the evening, earlier to bed set. And the waxing moon people might be those who gain some speed or who are more night owlish. But new moon people, y'all are, just like you said, need to be in your own space, need to have that rest. It's essential. It's natural.
Like, for example, in the month of March, and trust me, I'm grateful for this. I'm not complaining. I'm grateful that I get to travel. I have the means to travel. I have the time to travel. I've never have been able to do that previously in my life. So I'm grateful. I'm just saying it doesn't fit me. It doesn't feel like me that in the month of March right now, these aren't big trips. But Rachel, even just the fact that 1 week we're going down to Florida to, for the first time ever, see my brother and his wife, their place that they have there, and stay for like 4 days. Then the next week, we're going to Nashville. Very familiar with going to Nashville. It's a quick, easy trip, just for 2 days. And then the next week is me going to Austin. I'm having my third plant medicine experience, the psilocybin journey. It's going to be a very deep one intentionally. And the two trips I just mentioned to you are just in and out, no big deal. But I will tell you, I don't want to do it. I can't, my husband laughs at me, but I'm like, I am the kind of person that even if it's a quick trip, I don't want them back to back. I don't want to go week. I want like to go somewhere and then rest and be home for a month. Why do you think that is?
It's the new moon. It's the new moon. And let me also tell you that speaking of plant medicine journeys in the state of Texas, your moon line, so this is astrocartography, a different practice than astrology. I've been practicing natal astrology, which is reading your chart. Mundane astrology is reading the weather, which we're talking about in reference to your chart. And then astrocartography is the superimposition of the orbital lines of the planets onto the map, telling you what kind of experiences you might have where.
So, this is so cool.
Speaking of Texas, your moon line, the internal, runs right to the west of Austin, kind of right through San Antonio. And so it's going to be all of those internal, deep, profound experiences. You might have a lot of them along your moon line. And that would make complete sense. It might be a not harder, but like moon in Scorpio is deep and so deep, some people can't handle the deep. You're a Scorpio sun, so you absolutely can. But this journey itself might kind of bring you into a space that's so profound that it's difficult for some. Again, not particularly for you. But that is what you're likely to find during that journey in that place and at that time.
It's funny because I said to you, this is going to be deep intentionally. I told you that. Mm-hmm. And it's not just because I want it to be. It's I just knew it was going to be. Mm-hmm. Like I just said to Sigrid, I'm like, I know this is going to be deeper than the other two. And she said, I do too. And I also said to her, this feels very, very connected to my book, like very connected. Like wherever I go, it's going to be coming into the book. And she said, you know, I've never done this before, but what if we even recorded you? If you feel like some messages are coming to you or something you want to say, I can record you. And that can be something that could even go into the book because I'm certain that this is going to be a very, very important experience for me. I'm positive. Like I asked her to do this outside of our agreement, outside of our container, completely unconventional ask. She doesn't do this. And she said, I'm supposed to do this with you. And so we came up with an agreement outside of our container that we are doing this together. And it's going to be like 12 to 15 hours alone together. She's even said, I feel like I'm supposed to spend the night with you. I said, I feel the same way. It's interesting. So little side note, but I can tell that that's supposed to be it's going to be very deep.
Well, that totally fits the Scorpio archetype of that sort of privacy, right? Not having the deep journey in front of many people, including even the person who's with you, who's a female, which makes total sense with the moon. It would be the sun if it were a male or Mars, but it would be a female who does this experience with you. And it's so private that she doesn't even exit the space while you're experiencing the journey. That's completely in line. And that is exactly what you'll find in that location. And anytime that you visit those locations, like I'm sure when you've been in parts of Texas, you've experienced that kind of Scorpio part of yourself because your sun line runs just through East Texas. So the sun line is kind of Texas-Louisiana border for you. But in between that is Scorpio land in your chart. So bringing out those most deep, profound, emotional, personal parts of yourself. And your north node line also runs kind of through Texas, more like along the Gulf Coast, maybe through Houston. So there's deep purpose here too. There's deep purpose associated with all the things that you do in that space as well. And this is another practice which just adds color to the astrology, but allows us to be neutral, right? If you went on to your moon and Scorpio line expecting to like party and get out there and be all jazzy, like you're going to the wrong spot.
Okay, so I know this is like a different practice of yours, but since you just mentioned it, would you be willing to just look to and just say, okay, here may be another part of the world that you either are supposed to visit or you might feel called to, or Jill, you might want to just go there. Is there anything else you see?
Let's see. What would I do if I were you? I'd want to visit my own Jupiter line. Oh, yes. I can tell you right away that British Columbia is for you.
Really?
Vancouver, that part above there, like Kamloops, like just kind of the places that are on the western coast of Canada, right there near the border with the US. And even upwards, so even going up north, like just the coast of Canada between Vancouver and I would say like Whitehorse area, which is not coastal, but along that line, that's where I would travel for adventure, for personal seeking out of the divine. You'd find it on the coast.
Where is Banff? There once and I had an extremely powerful spiritual experience. Very powerful. I even have a picture. I have a photograph that is saved on the screen of my television in my bedroom of Archangel Michael showing himself to me.
You know I work with Archangel Michael too, or maybe you don't.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes.
I went to this place. It was, I think, Lake Louise it's called. And we were there for something unrelated. And I said, I think I'm supposed to go here. I had no idea that people go there to see Archangel Michael. Didn't know that. Had heard of Archangel Michael, but didn't really know much more.
That's right there. That's right on this line.
Okay.
It is right on the line.
Oh my God, I have goosebumps. Wait till I tell you this. I am covered in goosebumps. I'm going to cry. Oh my gosh. So I knew nothing about Archangel Michael other than, okay, I've heard of the guy, right? And I told my husband, I know I'm supposed to go to this place. And so we went to Lake Louise, the two of us, completely frozen over. We were standing there and I said, I need to go out by myself. And he stood back and ended up taking a picture of me. But I walked to the center of the lake and I kept focusing on the mountain to the left. And I just had my arms out like this. I'll send you the picture. And I just was praying and just I don't know how to explain it. I was saying to Archangel Michael, all of a sudden that name came to me. And I was saying, I am completely surrendering whatever book is in me. I am 100% surrendering to whatever is supposed to be written. I don't want it to be written before the time is right. I don't want it to be written about what I think it should be written about because I was trying to write at that time. I am 100% surrendering my life, like every bit of my life, to my highest purpose. And I just became very emotional in a good way, cried. We went on, looked at igloos, A couple hours later, we went back and we looked at the picture. And exactly where I was focusing, no one would have known but me, was this bright blue orb, just bright blue.
Michael appears to me as blue or indigo.
Okay. It's bright blue orb. I have goosebumps right now. Oh my gosh. And I looked and I was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly where because I could have seen anything in my periphery. It's like anything. And I was drawn to that one spot. Couldn't see anything with my eyes, but I just kept talking to that one spot. And then I looked up online and it said, Archangel Michael will show himself many times as a bright blue orb. And so I have that picture saved in my bedroom on those TVs that become like a screen, you know, it looks like a piece of art. Anyway, when I was there, I felt like I was like outside of myself. The whole time I was there, I felt like I was in a movie. We'd walk down the street and I would see people and I was like, are these really people? Are they not people? Like it was a really cool experience.
That actually, so all those lines, you have Jupiter, Mercury, and Venus, obviously they're together in your chart. They run across almost like a rainbow through British Columbia and over into Alberta and kind of across Canada and up north in this way. And so even if you were to go further north in Alberta, further north in British Columbia, even more of the same.
Okay, so I've mentioned Violet, the spirit healer, and she lives north of Alberta.
There you go. That's perfect. That is utterly perfect. The Northwest Territories are also, they hold spiritual stuff for you too. Totally.
And my two dear friends who are 100% soul sisters, like they were a part of my first, I'll just call it my first spiritual awakening. They were like the ones that like cracked me open. And they live in that area as well. I was just texting with them yesterday. That's where they live. And I've always just jived with them. And when I was in multi-level marketing, the company I was with, I would win this trip every year where we'd go to this resort. And I would find myself in the pool with all of these Canadians. I was never around the people I knew. All my friends were like, why do you always ditch us to hang out with them? And I'm like, I do? I didn't even know it. I just vibe with them. And I would hang out in this little tiny pool with maybe 15 or 20 of these Canadians who were all just like a different vibe to me than everybody else at the resort.
That's where I would go if I were you. That's astrocartography. Typically, I don't identify a line like that without somebody going, oh my God, I have to tell you what happened over there. It was so great. So I love that. And that's kind of the power of astrocartography. By the way, I think it's worth noting, I was raised in the Jewish faith at our home. And so Archangel Michael was not on my, I mean, I knew who he was, but it was not on my radar either. I was not trying to see Archangel Michael, but I had committed my life to the same thing that you just mentioned, universal service, and to whatever my purpose is, and let me be a conduit for whatever I am here to bring to this earth and all the people within it. I commit my life to this. And that was when Michael showed up. I also felt the need to share him with a couple of my closest friends. And so while I felt like I still had the presence, I like called my friends up and like, you have to come here. I have to come in here. And sure enough, these are my best friends. I mean, just was texting with one of them as well.
Oh my goodness.
We hadn't discussed this either. I hope that
no,
the listeners
this is all
know.
New.
You and I hadn't discussed. Yeah.
This is all new. They've heard me mention Violet before. I will tell you one last thing about her. She told me that I'm the only person in her life that she's ever worked with more than one or two times. And I've been working with her for 10 years. Like she said, not that she wouldn't, but she said, I'm meant to be someone that people are called to me. I might have one session with them, maybe a second one, maybe every few years, a revisit. And I've been working closely with her for 10 years. I just knew I was supposed to. And she has said yes. And I feel like it's connected to what you're talking about.
I absolutely feel that way too. I mean, it's clear there's some deep and powerful access that you have, and this is in your chart and I'm sure just in your lived experience, to levels of healing which are profound and even more profound when shared.
Can you see in someone's chart, Rachel, how many children they're supposed to have or they have had? Or if they are going to be a physical mother?
If I have their house placement.
What's that? Oh, that's the time?
Yes.
We forgot to tell them. We don't know what time I was born.
Mm-hmm. And for listeners out there, I'm reading what I'm reading without a birth time. So if you have a chart, it is still tons of information we can get without knowing the birth time. That just gives us the house placement and arrangement. So speaking of the fifth house, looking at the fifth house will tell me a lot about whether or not someone will have children, how many they'll have, when they'll have them potentially, and you know what might happen in relation to the children, those sorts of things. So yes, there's tons of information we can get about.
So cool. Thank you so much for doing this. I just love learning from you.
Thank you for having me. It's such a joy to be back again, second time.
So great. Oh, great. I'm so excited for everyone to hear this. And again, Rachel Ruth Tate, is it rachelruthtate.com?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, rachelruthtate.com. I can't wait for people to contact you and have readings with you. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Jill. It has been an honor.